He was an anthropologist, both physical and cultural. He was an archaeologist. He was a diplomat. He was a vice president. He was a leader and champion in the struggle for the Bill of Rights. He was a member of the House of Burgesses, president of the American Philosophic Society, two-time governor of Virginia, wrote the Northwest Ordinance, and, of course, purchased Louisiana. Oh, and he wrote the Declaration of Independence. What I'm trying to suggest is that Thomas Jefferson did in a month more than most of us will do in a lifetime. And keeping up with him and the variety of things he engages in his career is no small challenge. Well, there's an even greater challenge involved in studying Jefferson, which is the difficulty of penetrating into his character and finding the common threads that seem to unite his beliefs. Perhaps the best way of demonstrating this is by looking at the nature of his legacy. And it's really unique in American history. We think of the other great revered figures of our political past, people like Lincoln and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And they certainly loom large, but they each have a particular party affiliation. Lincoln, the champion of the Grand Old Party. Franklin Roosevelt, the creator of the New Deal coalition, which informs the current Democratic Party. Jefferson is different. Jefferson is appropriated by both Democrats and Republicans. Our current president, William Jefferson Clinton, began his march to the inaugural by visiting Monticello. At the same time, Newt Gingrich and George Will claim to be staunch Jeffersonians. It doesn't just devolve on the major political parties. It's wider than that. For example, the political theorist Richard K. Matthews has argued that a very perceptive reading of Jefferson, that Jefferson is in fact a proto-socialist anarcho-syndicalist. He's a champion of grassroots participatory democracy, and he has real misgivings about the rights to private property. At the same time, perhaps the greatest American poet of the 20th century, Ezra Pound, has argued in a book called Jefferson and/or Mussolini, that Jefferson is in fact the spiritual forebearer of fascism. Jefferson is appropriated by left-wing libertarians and by right-wing militias. Looking at Jefferson's political legacy is in some ways like looking at a Rorschach. We find what we want. Well, that's reflected also in studying the man as well as the legacy. Jefferson has been studied by some of the greatest American historians, and they all come out with the same conclusion. They've cited him. They've hunted this big game, but they can never capture him. Perhaps the most successful endeavor has been Joe Ellis' recent award-winning study of him. It won the National Book Award, in fact. It's a fantastic book. The title, An American Sphinx, The Character of Thomas Jefferson. And that, I think, is very apt. Jefferson is in many ways a riddle. He's an enigma. It's hard to get to know Jefferson, and we're going to explore some of the reasons that's the case. Dumas Malone spent a lifetime studying Thomas Jefferson. He read 60,000 pieces of correspondence, state papers, commonplace books, garden books, account books. After a lifetime and six volumes of magnificent biography, he concluded by saying, I never really got to understand the guy. He eluded me. So we have quite a challenge ahead of us. I want to talk a little bit about why it is such a great challenge. And it largely has to do with Jefferson himself, the fact that he doesn't want us to know him at a personal and private level. He's extremely private. He's extremely secretive. He kept no diary. His autobiography contains exactly two paragraphs about his early life before he's a college student. And even those paragraphs mention nothing about his experiences. They merely tell us about who his father and his mother was. What we could have perhaps tried to cull from his childhood and his personal life, his correspondence with his wife and mother, are gone. Presumably the correspondence with his mother was destroyed in a fire at Shadwell. After his wife died, he burnt the correspondence with his wife. So Jefferson tries to keep us at a distance. Let me give you some examples. Outside of family members, no one ever recalls hearing Thomas Jefferson laugh in his lifetime. No one ever recalls him telling a joke. His daughter, Martha Jefferson, who was devoted to him and spent almost all of her life by his side, remembers only twice did he lose his temper. And even then, he didn't even raise his voice. He just sort of raised his eyebrows and gave a steely look at those he was angry at. So we're looking at a man who wears a very heavy stoic mask of manners. And while many have seen that mask of manners as the genuine Jefferson, Jefferson himself, as he informs his grandson, is aware that it's not. It is a mask. He writes to Thomas Randolph in 1808, "In truth, politeness is artificial good humor. It covers the natural want of it." and ends by rendering habitual, a substitute nearly equivalent to the real virtue.